Ramai ke Gamuramai ke Bhakti Devi ke Tulasi Devi ke Samavita Bhakti Vrinda ke Janata Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the Samadha Bhaktis. All glories to the Samadha Bhaktis. All glories to the Samadha Bhaktis. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Sri Guru. So you still continue, you know? So then we'll continue with Gandharvika and Pratyasis. Then after, then Bhakti Karan, she came? Yeah? Okay. And then Rajeshwari, Devi Das. You just continue from where you were yesterday? Everybody here was here yesterday? Anybody just came today, wasn't here yesterday?
Okay. I can just like shortly say what I said.
Yeah. Yeah, very short, and then go into the continue.
So I was making like connecting story about how the gopis became the queens of Dwaraka. And then I said the story how Radharani and Vishakha drowned in Yamuna and went to the sun planet, and how Radha became Satyabhama, and also how Chandravali became Rukmini, and how she married Krishna and became the main queen and the first queen. And also very important point is that Krishna's promise to Bhishmaka Maharaj that he is not going to marry any other girl without Rukmini's permission. And I'm continuing the story from the point where Satyabhama is living in Navavrindavan. This is in the palace of Rukmini. And she's living with two friends, Navavrinda and Bakula, and she doesn't know that the queen, she doesn't know the queen is Rukmini, she doesn't know the king is Krishna, and she's feeling a strong separation from Krishna, and Krishna he met Radharani with this form of the deity, he doesn't know that Satyabhama is Radharani. So for some time, Satyabhama was living in Navavrindavan, and she was feeling so much separation from Krishna, even if Krishna was so near. But then Narada Muni, to make the things more interesting, he went to Uddhava, and he said the whole story to Uddhava. So he said to Uddhava how Radharani drowned in Yamuna, how she went to the sun planet, how she became Satyabhama, and how she is now living in our Vrindavan. So Uddhava, because Krishna is his friend, so he immediately went to Krishna and said the story. So said that actually, you're Radha, you're so much feeling separation from her, but she's here in your palace living in our Vrindavan. So Krishna went to Satyabhama, and then they meet. I will not describe this because I don't know the meeting of Radha and Krishna. But then Radharani asked, but what happened with my friends? I'm so much missing my friends. What happened with Lalita, with Vishakha? And then Krishna started telling the story. When he went to Jambavan to take the jewel, Shyamantaka jewel, he said to Jambavan he has to take a jewel back. But Jambavan said, it's not possible because my daughter Jambavati, she's so much attached for the jewel. She's all the time carrying the jewel with herself. And she never goes, nothing, she doesn't do anything without the jewel. And then Radha was telling, but why is this, or who is this girl? She said, the jewel actually was on the demon Shankachuda, on his crown was the jewel, Shyamantaka jewel. So when Krishna killed the demon, he gave the jewel as a present to Radharani. And then Radharani had the jewel with herself, so the jewel was like a witnessing all the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Radharani all the time had the jewel with her. So when she drowned and went to sun planet, then she gave the jewel to Surya god. And then Surya gave the jewel to Satrajit together with Radha. But she was thinking, but why this girl is now attached to this jewel? What is the connection? And then Krishna said, can you explain to me what the girl is doing during the day, how she's behaving? And then the Jambavan said, oh yes, she's worshipping the deity. She has the deities of Radhika and Madhava. Madhava looks just like you. And then Krishna said, but can I see the girl? And then he went and saw the girl, and then he recognized this was Lalita. And then but Krishna didn't know how Lalita became the daughter of Jambavan, so he asked, but what happened? And then Jambavan tell the story. When he was living in South India, then Narada Muni again came to him and said, you should go on Govardhan and meditate on your Lord Ram. So Jambavan went on Govardhan, he started meditating, And then he saw how one girl is flying on the sky, because Lalita jumped from Govardhan. So Jambavan jumped and he took the girl in his hands, so he saved her. And this is how Lalita became Jambavati, his daughter. And then, but Krishna, because he promised to Bhishmaka, King Bhishmaka, that he will not marry any other girl without Rukmini's permission, so he couldn't marry Jambavati. So he took Jambavati and hid her on mountain Raivata. And then while he was there, then he saw one girl doing so much tapasas and austerities. And he was wondering, who is this girl? She's doing such austere tapasyas. And then he went to another girl who was taking care about this girl and asked, who is this girl? And then she said, this is Kalindi. And she is doing Radha Vishta Sadhana. This is the tapasya to become again with Radha. And then Krishna came closer and he saw that this is actually Vishaka. So then he took also Vishaka to mountain Raivata where Lalita was. And then the other five, then this is like in kingdom of Avanti, Shabya was known as Mitravinda. So Mitravinda, it was arranged for her marriage with Duryodhana. But she was hearing about Krishna, so because she's originally Gopi, so she wanted to marry Krishna, so she wrote the letter to Krishna, and Krishna kidnapped her, the same as Rukmini. Then in kingdom of Avanti, in promise of Kosala, Padma was known as Nagnajiti. In kingdom of Kaikeya, Gopi Bhadra, she had the same name. And in province of Madra, Shyama was known as Lakshmana. So this is this main eight leader gopis. So the three, so Padma, Shabya, and Shyama, they were choosing Svayamvara, they chose Krishna for their husband. But Krishna, he couldn't marry them, so he put them also to mountain Raivata, because of the promise to King Bhishmaka. So another, so this is eight. So another 16,100, they went to Yamuna to meditate how to become again united with Krishna. And then the demon, Narakasura, came and he stole all 16,100 gopis. And he bring them to the Maniparvata. And there the gopis were worshipping Kamadevi to become Krishna, to get Krishna as their husband. So Krishna came and he stole all 16,100 gopis and he also put them to the mountain Raivata. So now on mountain Raivata we have 16,106 gopis. So he said this story to Radharani, but he didn't say to her that actually Chandravali is Rukmini. This he was hiding. And then, so now we have a pastimes between Radha and Krishna happening in our Vrindavan. And it's very interesting that now the situation is opposite. Now Radharani is, though she's living in our Vrindavan and she's not married. And Krishna, he is married. He has a wife, Rukmini. So now Krishna is the one who always have to make some tricks how to escape and meet with Radha. Sometimes he will go to Rukmini and say, oh, I have to go to Brahmaloka for a very important meeting. And then Rukmini, she's very submissive, so she was telling, yes, please go. So like this, Krishna was always finding some ways to be with Radha. But then Rukmini starts feeling, my husband is never at home, he's always going somewhere. And then Rukmini has very tricky girlfriend, Madhavi. She's very smart. So Madhavi said, I think that your husband is very often go to Nava Vrindavan. There is maybe some problem there. So she suggested Rukmini, I think that you should take Satyabhama back to your palace. So Rukmini, she's very submissive, so she said, okay, so she went to Satyabhama and said to Satyabhama, my dear friend, I'm so much suffering just looking how you're living in this forest in one kunj, and I'm living in a palace, and you're just like my sister, so please come live with me. And Satyabhama, she was so sad, because this means she's not going to meet with Krishna anymore if she will live together in Rukmini's palace. But Satyabhama didn't have any excuse what to say, so she agreed. So she went to live in Rukmini's palace. And then these pastimes between Radha and Krishna became even more interesting. Now Krishna had somehow to go inside in the quarters of Rukmini. So he was in different ways changing as a girl and somehow always coming to Radha. But then in one day, Vrishvasis came to Rukmini's palace. Mother Yashoda, Purnamasi, Mukara, all the Vrishvasis. And by arrangement of Lila Shakti, also Lalita and Vishaka came, like Kalindi and Jambavati. And then Yogamaya just made arrangement that they all recognize each other. And then actually Radharani recognized that Rukmini is Chandravali, and Chandravali recognized in this moment that this is Radharani, her sister. But they were very happy to see each other, because actually they are sisters. Because Chandravali's father is Chandrabanu, and Radharani's father is Vrishabanu, and Vrishabanu and Chandrabanu, they are brothers. So they are like cousin sisters. So they were very, very happy to see each other. And then Rukmini did something very, when I was reading, I was very amazed. She went to Purnamasi and said, please, can you beg Radha that she accept my husband and as her husband? And then Purnamasi said, okay, maybe you should approach Yashoda and ask her to say this to Radha. So she went, Purnamasi went to Yashoda and said, Your daughter Chandravali, she would like to put Radha's hand in the hand of Krishna, and this will make her glorious forever. So then Yashoda approached Radharani, and then the marriage is arranged between Satyabhama and Krishna, and also Krishna and other gopis, because now Rukmini gave the permission that Krishna can marry other gopis. But then when they became married, all the gopis, they forgot about their gopi bhav. They were completely into their Vedic love with Krishna, and they actually forgot that they're gopis. And Krishna, he also forgot that they are gopis. So, and then by arrangement of Yogamaya, the original gopis were back to Vrindavan and still have feelings of separation and wanted to be united with Krishna. And Krishna, living with the queens of Dwaraka, because he forgot that they are gopis, he also had the same feeling of separation, and he wanted to go back to Vrindavan and meet with Radha. So, like Krishna, he doesn't manifest all the qualities as of Rajasundar Krishna. He doesn't manifest all qualities in Dwaraka Krishna. So, like this, the queens, they're expansions of gopis, but they're not manifesting all the qualities, even if they are the same person. So this is the end.
It's an important element to the, in the pastimes, because all these different layers happen at the same time, is that you have the gopis that are there, feeling the separation. You have those gopis that, in this case, then left Vrindavan and, you know, expanded, went into Dwarka. And then you also many times have other pastimes that are going on simultaneously when Krishna goes back and visits Vrindavan and all these. So sometimes you have many, many different groups of the Brajvasis manifesting different moods all at the same time. You know, so this is so, because the pastimes there, how do you say, the element is that you're tasting the pastime from various angles. So sometimes it's very similar, sometimes it's different. You know, it's just like here Krishna is in Swakya, but he's tasting separation. But, you know, so that will have one flavor. But if you take that to more extreme, then you have Ramachandra. So the pastime actually completely changes. Because there it's then the feeling of separation in Swakya. But then, you know, so that will be different than Krishna's in Swakya and the gopis are in Vrindavan. You know, so it's kind of like you're getting adjustments all in between, everything in between. You know, like there, like Mataji mentioned, that Radharani's married, Krishna's not. But in this case, in Radharani's not married, Krishna is. You know, so, but because it's his scene, it changes it, you know, the formality of it. Because Radharani's being married doesn't, it has a influence on to create the parakia that it's not illegal, but it doesn't change the situation in which it's experienced. Does that make sense? Still, it's Vrindavan, and they go to the forest and this and that. But Krishna being married changes the situation in which the pastime happens. Therefore, it's in Dwarka. It's within a, you know, this situation of his being married. In other words, it's all happening within his queen's palace and grounds. Does that make sense? So you get all these different flavors. So that's the idea. So it's important in these things that it's understood that these are all various things that are going on all at the different same time. It's also important that you have the element of the, what do you call it? Kalpa Veda. Means that each yuga, then every Dwapara Yuga, Krishna, the avatar is black, his name is Krishna, so his consort will be Radha. But only once in a day of Brahma, then he will be Swayam Krishna. Does that make sense? So those pastimes then are the most full. But then you have all these other pastimes that happen also in other ages. So those will be many times talked about in the various Puranas. So sometimes then in the different Puranas, like Brahma Vaivarta, there's many, many pastimes that are mentioned. But the element there is that it's very different flavor than what we're used to, because we're dealing with actually different expansions. Does that make sense? So it's, there's a different thing. You know, the Brajbasis are fighting, cursing each other. Then Vrinda's coming as Tulsi, like this, these kind of things. So it's not so much our mood. It's there, these things happen, but they're different expansions. So it should be the one of the elements in this Achinta Veda Veda Tattva is to be able to accommodate all these differences that they can all be there and happen at the same time. Does that make sense? But within that, we have our specific element that we are, that's important to us. Does that make sense? Yeah? No? Yeah. Okay. Okay, so now we'll be Bhakti Sharan Matati. So she'll be speaking on verse 26.
It's important in here. It's understood that, you know, we're not professionals, we're not this, that. So it's not really important that he's saying, sorry, I'm not so good at this, I don't know the language, or this, that. It means you see, it doesn't matter. You know, it's a very cosmopolitan audience, and we just happen to be using English as our medium. So it's not so these things, or we're not accustomed to speaking this, that. It doesn't matter. The point is that what we have gleaned from this, what's important to us, we're trying to share that. That's all. So it's, this is not a, how you say, a competition in, you know, oratory abilities or anything like that. So everyone should just, you know, relax and just, you know, come, sit, and just what you have to say, then speak.
So I'm going to start off with a quote from text 26. O my Lord Krishna, I beg to offer my prayers unto you. My mind is like the bee, and it is after some honey. Kindly therefore give my bee mind a place at your lotus feet, which are the resources for all transcendental honey. I know that even big demigods like Brahma do not see the rays of the nails of your lotus feet, even though they are engaged in deep meditation for years together. Still, O infallible one, my ambition is such, for you are very merciful to your surrendered devotees. O Madhava, I know also that I have no genuine devotion for the service of your lotus feet, but because your lordship is inconceivably powerful, you can do what is impossible to be done. Your lotus feet can deride even the nectar of the heavenly kingdom, and therefore I am very much attracted by them. O Supreme Eternal, please, therefore let my mind be fixed at your lotus feet, so that eternally I may be able to relish the taste of your transcendental service. I was inspired by this song sung by Srila Rupa Goswami because it shows me where my mind should be if I really want to serve Krishna instead of my mind and senses. And Srila Prabhupada further writes that the essence of everything is the Supreme Lord. And he is called Sharam. And those who sing or talk about him are called Sharangas, the pure devotees. The pure devotees are always hankering after the lotus feet of the Lord. Similarly, in text 31 purport, Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Chakravarti Thakur describes the queens of Dwarka. Due to strong ecstasy, they became caught up with the idea of embracing the Lord, just as the inhabitants of the city of Dwarka became alert to receive the Lord in the most befitting manner after hearing the sound of the auspicious conch shell in text 1. I've heard Srila Prabhupada disciples mention the mood in the early days when Srila Prabhupada wasn't in the temple, and it was one of Srila Prabhupada's coming. So there was just like the residents eagerly waiting to receive Krishna. It seemed like they were fired up and eagerly waiting to receive Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, they were always alert and enthusiastic in their service. And enthusiasm is one of the six principles favorable for the execution of pure devotional service. And in Nectary Instruction, text 3, it's written that without enthusiasm, one cannot be successful. Enthusiasm means action for Krishna. The nature of the soul is active. So if we're not actively seeking Krishna, then we'll be actively serving Maya. So we need to have a checkpoint throughout our activities in the day, and we can think, where is Krishna in this? And if we can't find Krishna in it, then we can presume that we're engaged in Maya. And also we must have Lauyam, which is intense greed, just like the honeybee after the nectar. I was making garland outside Srila Maharaj's samadhi one day, and the bees would come for the flowers to get the honey. And one day the bees were so enthusiastic that as I was making the garland, the bees were actually going in the flowers as I was threading the flowers on the garland. And it made me smile, because it's like Krishna reminding me that I need to be not just enthusiastic to serve Krishna, but so greedy to serve Krishna after the nectar. So we must be enthusiastic. Furthermore, in text 31, Srila Prabhupada writes of the queens that this prime state of ecstasy annihilated all other formalities and social conventions, and thus they escaped all the stumbling blocks on the path of meeting the Lord. And that is a perfect stage of meeting the Lord of the soul, Sri Krishna. And like Maharaj said the other day, about getting the upadis out of the way, and like getting the me out of the picture and just serving 100%. And Sridhar Maharaj gave me a few instructions before he left his body, and one was always follow your heart and never be afraid to speak the truth and sort of serve the Vaishnav. So we have no qualification to serve the Lord directly, so only through the representative of the Lord or the pure devotees can we receive the Lord's mercy. Throughout the whole 11th chapter, I saw the way that the citizens of Dwarka are receiving Krishna and serving Krishna. It reminded me how I should be serving the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. And in texts 4 and 5, the citizens are offering their presentations to the Lord. And even though Krishna is self-sufficient, he still accepts their offerings. And he accepts everything from everyone that is offered in pure devotional service. And similarly, with the spiritual master, he accepts the devotion of his devotee, but he accepts the love in which it's offered rather than the actual end product, because so many times that you can offer service to the guru and yet the service seems so materially imperfect, and yet it's still received from the spiritual master as if it's the most precious jewel. In text 9 it's said that our eyes become useless in the absence of the Lord, and therefore it is necessary that we always remain in the sight of the Lord, engaging our mind and senses in the service of the Lord or his devotees. So, for without the light of Krishna, we will be in the darkness of Maya or illusion. So we mustn't become complacent. Only by keeping a check on our motivation and the mood in our heart can we remain fixed in the light of Krishna. And devotional service means with body, mind and words. It's easy to see when we get slack in our body because there's physical time for Maya. And so by keeping busy, engaged nicely in devotional service, this helps. and we don't become idle. And we must also be attentive to serving without discrimination. It's very easy sometimes. We can serve the Guru, serve the pure devotees, serve Srila Prabhupada disciples very nicely. But then when the Matajis are trying to get to the Maha first in the queue on Jamastami, or offering Guru Puja, or the gardener that's gardening, or your Mataji that's washing, sometimes you cannot have so much time, so much of a humble attitude. And recently, when I was on the South Indian Yatra, I was in Rameshram, and Shiva was the predominant deity there. And I was thinking, I tried to feel what realizations I was getting, and the realization was that Shiva is the best of devotees, because we can endeavor to serve and all other devotees can serve, but Shiva serves without discrimination. And it made me realize that I need to go deeper into my heart and check that in my service, am I really serving without discrimination properly? And so we can check this tendency within ourselves. And also, this is mentally speculating, but it must come to some point that you get to a point where you don't even notice the distinction between the gardener's body and the guru's body. And yet the service is still the same. You don't even come to the point where you're noticing that this is a gardener, this is a guru. You're just serving the servants of Krishna. So we need to be equally humble. And that way, it can help us from becoming proud. In text 4 and 5, the citizens... So then we must check our words. In Nectar of Instruction, it says that the tongue should be trained to speak only of Krishna and taste only Krishna prasadam. And he further advises the devotees to train their mind in order that they will be unable to remember anything other than Krishna. In Majjalila texts, sort of 17.133, it says, material senses cannot appreciate Krishna's holy name, form, qualities, and pastimes. When a conditioned soul is awakened to Krishna consciousness and renders service by using the tongue to chant the Lord's holy name and taste the remnants of the Lord's food, the tongue is purified and one gradually comes to understand who Krishna is. So another thing that can help us is the Shikshastika prayers. And by keeping especially the third verse of the Shikshastika prayers round our neck like an ornament, it can help us to serve in the mood of humility. But sometimes, because our false ego, the nature of the false ego is such that when we get tested, it becomes a noose round our neck strangling us rather than assisting us. And it can seem quite difficult to be remembering we're the servant of the servant and to serve without discrimination. So hopefully by remembering that every test is coming from Krishna, we can refrain from aparads. And then we can endeavour to follow in the Vedic way of receiving great personalities. This creates an atmosphere of respect which is saturated with affection and veneration for the person received. This exchange is full of sincerity. In text 7, the citizens address the Lord as follows. O creator of the universe, you are our master, well-wisher, Lord, Father, spiritual master and worshipable deity. By following in your footsteps, we have become successful in every respect. We pray, therefore, that you continue to bless us with your mercy. Similarly, when we serve the spiritual master with unalloyed devotion, he becomes our everything, our mother, our father, our well-wisher, and the relationship becomes transcendental. And by following in his footsteps, if Krishna so desires, we may become a recipient of the Lord's mercy. I just quote from the purport, text 39, that the Lord can be known by the mercy of the Lord only and by no other means. And just to finish, just one realization I got from the South Indian Yatra, of seeing how enthusiastic and what a nice service attitude all the devotees in Chaupati had. And I come back with new eyes, coming back to Mayapur, not wanting to get out of the bath of the nectar of Lord Chaitanya. But also I had a shadow in my heart, and it was a shadow of fear, of losing the association of Vaishnavas, of losing the intense greed and everything. So we, Srila Prabhupada used to say, the problem with people in the West is that they have no fear of Maya. And it was like the beginnings of the awakenings of some fear of Maya, which I relished. Okay. Please forgive me for my offences.
We can see is that even in the past times, and that was mentioned before, that the devotees, besides feeling the separation from Krishna, are very much hankering for that. They also have that mood of hankering for the association of devotees. So even though Satyabhama was there and she was getting the association of Krishna, she still missed all of her associates in which she was serving Krishna. So this element of what Mataji was bringing out now is just the importance of the association of devotees, the importance of that proper mood of service, the service attitude, that humility. These are all what's very, very important in the process. Many times, we may mistake the externals of the process as the most important and not necessarily the attitude. But we see here for Krishna, you know, it's the proper mood, that it's by his mercy that we get. So that means he's impressed when the attitude is right, because how much service we can render. He's being served by hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis, so it's our service can never compare, either in quality or in quantity, but that sincere attempt is being made, that's what pleases Krishna. In this, we also need to mention that external here, we're only using it to make a distinction within the absolute of devotional service. Does this make sense? Right? Because sometimes external, internal meanings, we take external as something undesirable, low class, nothing to be dealt with. But it's just like in Krishna's pastimes, you do have the dham itself, you do have the cows, you have the gopis, you have the gopas, you know, you have the kalpa brikshas, you have the peacocks. So it's all transcendental, but there's distinction. So in this case also, the devotional process, there's a distinction, there's internal, external. External is the form through which you render the service. So it's no less important. But the actual service is in the mood in which it's rendered. Does that make sense? It means you want to express affection for Krishna, but you have to have something to express it through. So what you're expressing it through, therefore, becomes important. Does that make sense? You know? You want to express your affection for somebody. You give them a gift. It's not the gift that's important. It's the mood in which it's given. But without the gift, you can't express that affection. Therefore, the gift becomes important, because of its ability to work as a medium to express that affection. So in this way it becomes important. But, so the only reason the distinction is made is if you think the gift itself is the important thing and the mood doesn't matter. Then we make the distinction. But if you don't make the distinction, it doesn't have to be pointed out. Right? So to save us in conditioned consciousness from thinking the external is exclusively the important without the mood, then these things are pointed out. Right? Just like Ramananda Roy is asked by Lord Chaitanya, what is you know, perfection? And he says, following the, you know, varnashram duties properly, you know, to please the Lord. So then Lord says, that's external. So then most devotees just take, oh, it's a write-off, it's useless, come on, throw it out, we have nothing to do with it, you know, it's like, you know, something terrible. But all it means is that's not the actual mood. The mood is more important. So he keeps taking it up till he just gets to pure unalloyed bhava, the pure unalloyed mood. So that's the thing. The medium is secondary. But it's not that the medium's not important. Right? So that's just to make that clear, because sometimes that gets in this, between the two. So the association of devotees therefore becomes very, very important. And then with that, then naturally there's the situations and activities and that you do in that association. So that's nice. So, like the, yes.
Unreliable life. Practically missed the whole presentation, but I caught the drift from your summary. So, if you don't mind us fast-forwarding in the Bhagavatam a few cantos ahead, I just want to give, we can say this is like, you know, like in the cinema, they have trailers. You know? There's the main film being shown, which is now first canto. But coming soon, or maybe not so soon, coming attraction is, for example, canto 4. And there is just, for me, one of the most wonderful pastimes, because it is, I have a mind that very much is attracted to esoteric things. So, just on this point of relationships between devotees, something very esoteric is revealed in the fourth canto, and this is where the sons of King Prachinibarhi. It's actually just like a film, and that. You're being shown King Prachinibarhishat, who is seated on the throne. He's a very great Vaishnava. And he's just winding up his career as king. He's doing all kinds of yogis, very religious person. But his sons, who are to take over the throne, so that he can leave and seriously pursue spiritual life, are themselves performing austerities in the forest as brahmacharis to prepare them, because this is the way it used to be. At every stage, ashram transition, great austerities are involved. You see, having been a member of ISKCON many years, I do remember, and maybe it's still going on, how the tradition, the transition from brahmachari to grihastha ashram more in this movement proceeds like some kind of release from prison and festival. And, you know, when the girl is picked out, when the boy finally screws up his courage to reveal that he wants to get married and gets through all that, you know, razzing from his fellow godbrothers in Saffron. And then This is what we used to call putting up the white flag. So he puts up the white flag. And then he's associating more with the grihasthas after that. Maybe the wife is not chosen, but they're slapping him on the back, welcome to the party, like that. And then you suddenly see before he was, you know, he might have been very austere book distributor, but now he starts to relax and the old hairs start to get a little longer. And then the girl is chosen, and then like that, you know. But actually, in Vedic culture, that transition involved very great preparation. So we see that Prachetas, the sons of King Prachinibarhi, they actually, when they were, after having gone through Gurukul, and were ready to take Grihastha life, they went to the forest, and they performed severe austerities. What were their austerities? They went to a beautiful bay, which actually was a bay to the ocean, and they entered into the ocean, and underwater they performed austerities for a long, 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 long time, just to prepare themselves to step from Brahmacharya ashram to Grihastha ashram. So it was no big pizza party with all your new friends in white, you know. Okay, great. Now you're going to find out what life is really all about. When you're a Grihastha, you can do this and you can do that and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it was a very, very serious step. And also because they're royalty. So that means when they came back, the oldest would assume the throne and the youngers would take the highest positions in government as the foremost princes. And that would mean that practically they would become like sub-kings, because generally the oldest son would bequeath his brothers with important jurisdictions, provinces of the kingdom. And so they would all rule together. So anyway, like I said, it's like a film flashing back and forth. King Prachinibarhi is on the throne just waiting for his sons to return. Then he can go. They're under the water performing austerities. And then Narada comes to King Prachinibarhi and he preaches to him. Just this purport is, you just go. Get off the throne. Go to the forest right now. Take vanapras, take sannyas, you know, that's the sannyas for the kshatriyas. And he said, I'm only here because I'm waiting for my son. Don't talk nonsense. Get off the throne and go. You can turn this over to your ministers, to your, you know, council of brahmanas. They can run the show here. Don't be attached. Don't worry that everything's going to fall apart because you're not here. Because he gives these very wonderful spiritual instructions. And at the end, King Prachinibarhi, he folds his hands and says, Narada Muni, you are my spiritual master. I understand everything you said. And then Narada Muni says, if you've understood, then you'll go. If you accept me as guru, then you'll go. And then as soon as he started to backpedal, Narada Muni, you can just imagine he was reaching for his tumburu. All right, I'm leaving. No, please. Then go. this is guru. If you accept him. Guru means heavy, you see. Then he can be like a heavy, crushing weight on your material life. That's why among all the planets, Shani, Saturn, is considered the best friend of the devotees, because he puts a heavy, crushing weight. All the materialists are, you know, if Shani's on their chart, they're just running for the hills, you know, to do all kinds of pujas to Hanuman, because Hanuman defeated Shani, and so, you know, Hanuman will remove the obstacles to sense gratification, etc., etc., etc. So anyway, then the Prachetas, the king's sons, they are, you see, this is the real point I wanted to come to, that they are such an example through the whole Bhagavatam. If you want to become inspired, because Bhagavatam is secret treasure. So that's why in this class we want to map out. It's like this class is, one of these things is to be like treasure map, you see, to show you where the treasures are hidden. So if this is an issue with you, your association with devotees, you know, sometimes we get into corners. You know, I like to associate with this devotee, but not that. And we form little clubs. And, you know, and I mean, I'm just as much a rascal as everyone else in this regard. I have my friends, and I was talking with Maharaj last night about certain devotees I don't want to associate with. But actually, if we can break through, this is just another upadi, just another layer of false ego. If somehow or other we can break through that, or at least with those devotees that the Lord has put you together with, that you work with. Because, of course, this is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. You're not expected to be on intimate terms with every devotee everywhere. But at least those devotees with whom the Lord has given you co-service. If we can achieve the cooperation that the Prachetas, who are brothers, and we call one another God-brother, God-sister, so they were brothers. But they were brothers not in, you know, eating pizza and this and that, but brothers actually in severe austerities to please the Lord. Everything they were doing was to please the Lord. Then, as Sri Baladev Vidyabhushan points out in one of his works, a very unique form of the Lord appeared to them. A very rare appearance of the Lord with eight arms. Now, when the Lord appears with eight arms, each arm carrying a weapon, he appears simultaneously for different purposes, because this is a form of great opulence. He's showing, like the Lord is, we read in the Bhagavatam elsewhere, the Lord is the shelter of the Asta cities, the eight mystic powers. The Lord is the shelter of the Asta Lakshmis, the eight Lakshmis who bestow benedictions. So in that sense, when devotees cooperate together very nicely, they get empowered, they get blessed, even in the material sense, you see. They get protected, because these are weapons. Even the conch and the lotus are described in the verse as weapons. They receive protection from eight sides, it's from eight directions. And so the Lord came and says in a deep booming voice like thunder, he blessed the Prachetas and he immediately begins speaking on the point, because of your relationship, your selfless relationship as devotees of the Lord, working together so nicely, therefore I have come in this form. In other words, to bestow full blessings. And then you see everything material, when we talk about the eight Lakshmis or like that. This is more for in this world, material purposes. Eight Asta cities, eight empowerments, yogic empowerments. The yogis are seeking, you know, by thousands and millions of years of austerity to achieve just little drops of these cities, and then they become known as siddhas. But when the Lord comes with his eight arms and just bestows, it's like someone, David, you were, where was it, what you were saying? Or someone was saying, no, or maybe Maharaj, or I forgot. Recently someone was saying that when the Lord wants to give you something, then how with your two arms, how can you actually properly receive it? Especially if he comes with eight arms. You see? He's giving you with eight hands. You've only got two hands. And similarly, he wants to take away from you. How can you resist? But this is about blessing, benediction. And so he shows this form in the Bhagavatam with eight arms, being pleased by the very outstanding, super excellent sangha of the Prachetas and devotional service. Very, very, very austere devotional service, giving everything to the Lord. And we see the nature of his blessings, that he blesses them with full success when they go back and take over the throne of their father in their duties. They'll get everything needed. He gives them a very beautiful wife, which he asks them to share among themselves because they're on that platform of selflessness, that they'll have, not that they may take other wives, but their first wife, given by the Lord, is so extraordinarily beautiful. But they're so selfless, they'll not, like the Pandavas with Draupadi. They made an arrangement and they shared her. And she's actually, this lady he gave for them is actually an expansion of his own Lakshmi potency. So, and then, if we come to the transcendental side, then there's the eight bhavas, the eight perfections of ecstasy that one achieves. Prabhupada speaks about these, therefore I'm speaking about them, because this is very, extremely confidential. Prabhupada actually said, this is not something that we discuss lightly, but these eight bhavas are spoken of by Srila Prabhupada in connection with perfectional chanting of the holy name. So again, I'm always repeating this verse, Satam Prasanga Mama Virya Samvido, Satam Prasanga. Everything is based on Sangha, also in our chanting of the holy name. That is why, what is the Yuga Dharma? Huh? You don't have to think about this one, do you? Can we just all say it out loud? Sankirtan Dharma Ki Jai! Yes. And Sankirtan means congregational chanting of the holy name, as Prabhupada used to always literally translate it. So when we all come together in Sankirtan, or you're mentioning Chaupati, Mataji. So if you've ever been to Chaupati temple, see how they chant japa. All the devotees gather together. When Radhanath Maharaj is there, he sits down in a circle with his disciples. He sits in a circle with them, and they get up such a vibration of Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, japa going, that I remember when we went there, remember, Maharaj and I were kind of sitting near the circle. And it was just like being, you know, standing, you know, being near a kirtan, when the kirtaneers, those who are playing and singing, they get around in a circle, you know, and there's such a vibration coming out, joyous waves of Namamrita. So it was just the same. We were just sitting by that circle and feeling the waves of bliss of their japa. So this is when the Lord becomes most pleased, and then He manifests to give all His opulences, all His protection, and then most confidentially these bhavas, these eight bhavas, which Srila Prabhupada says, this is the perfection of chanting. The trembling, the uncontrollable tears pouring from the eyes. Prabhupada didn't speak about this much, but he definitely, you can hear it on record when he's explaining the holy name, that this is the gati, this is the goal. This is, or as in our terminology, prayojan. This is perfectional chanting. And we have seen here in Mayapur, when Srila Prabhupada, in speaking Bhagavad Gita, which is simply another form of kirtan, Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam class, which is, it is Bhagavad Dharma, which means it is simply another form of kirtan, because this is another mystery of the Bhagavatam, that is simply full of the holy names of the Lord. So it's a very interesting, you know, it's very intriguing. We're intrigued by the philosophy, we're entranced by the leelas. But when we go through the Bhagavatam, verse by verse by verse, we're reciting, hearing and chanting the names of the Lord. And what is the last, very last verse of the Bhagavatam in Canto 12? What is it telling us? It is, the Bhagavatam closes with the glories of Nama Sankirtan. That's the last verse. And then Chaitanya Charitamrita, which Prabhupada said is the postgraduate study, is all about the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You see? And Bhagavad Gita closes on the theme of surrendering fully to Krishna. You see? So Bhagavatam is opening there. What does it mean to surrender fully to Krishna? And then closes. The closing essence is Sankirtan, to chant His holy name. And then, so that's how these shastras are connected. Also something like Sambandha Avidya Prayojan. You know, because when you go through the Bhagavatam, well, you go through all shastras, but especially Bhagavatam, so many holy names are there. So this is the way to receive all blessings of the Lord. This is very wonderful and rather esoteric, just like this eight-handed form of the Lord is a very esoteric form. He comes when He wants to give very, very special blessings to His devotees. So this we see the Prachitta's God. So we can review our own spiritual lives, what's lacking, where the problems are, how Krishna might help us. And this is the answer. The answer is better and better and better sadhu sangha. So again, not to, you know, speak in an overconfident manner, but our intention for this course, that it will be like a bindu. You see, in a yantra, the center of any yantra, there's a bindu, there's a starting point in the very center, and then the yantra, you know what I mean by yantra, you see, then the yantra radiates out from the bindu. So that's also one of the esoteric purposes of our Bhagavatam class. We'd like to show everyone of the benefits of very nice sadhu sangha, but right now this is a little garden. We're trying to develop sadhu sangha here, just among ourselves. So thank you very much. Was that actually the last presentation, or the,
One more Hare
Krishna. Oh, again I talk so much. I think I'm gonna officially take mauna. Now there's only 4 minutes left. So, Rakeshwari Maharaji, where are you? Oh, that was you who came last yesterday? You think you can make your presentation in 4 minutes? Okay. So Thursday you'll start. And then we'll have questions. We'll go on to questions. You'll speak first, and then after that, then we're going to have questions. I'd like to say that I have looked at everyone's, those who handed in essays, I've looked at them all. And so I'll return them to you, but then you please bring them back on Thursday for our files. And on everyone I put the same comment. Because you wrote, all of you wrote very nice essays. This time because I corrected these late at night after having a very long and purifying discussion with Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj and settling my mind that sometimes tends to explode into all corners of the universe and focusing it again on some constructive activity. I corrected these papers. And yes, they're all very nicely written, and you make very nice points. But there was an essential point that I was looking for. And that was, again, I can read. Mari said, you remember, you recommended that I might write an essay. But instead of doing that, I'll just make a quick explanation. But the essential question is, that if Lord Sri Krishna's queens are his, after having quoted a verse in the 19th chapter of 6th canto, Vishnupatni Mahamayi Mahapurusha Lakshani, that the qualities, lakshana, of Vishnupatni, the wives of the Lord, are exactly the same as his. That means there's no question of them embodying anything material. That was the real point. Then, why does verse 38, which is one of the important verses, you've got it in your study guide, one of the often quoted verses of Canto 1, should be chapter 11, take the Lord's inward indifference to his 16,108 wives' feminine charms as proof of his divinity, because his wives are certainly not embodiments of the apara prakriti, the non-transcendental apara prakriti, the material potency. So none of you, I mean, you all gave very nice answers, but none of you specifically addressed that, you see. And again, being, as I said, a kind of, well, if you knew, anyway, never mind. But having an occult, a mind that moves in an occult fashion. So there was an occult hint in this question, because I quoted a verse from 19th chapter of 6th canto, and you could have found the answer that I was looking for if you had looked in that chapter, because of a few verses ahead, because this is quoted from an extremely, again, esoteric section of the Bhagavatam, which is giving a bindu, again, a condensation. Bindu also means condensation of a Bhagavata Dharma Archanapaditi. Archanapaditi means a deity worship handbook. So one is actually given there for the worship of the Lord and His consort in the forms of Lakshmi Narayan, but as the Sanat Kumar Sangita says, Saptashakshan Mahalakshmi Krishna Narayana Prabhu, I forgot the end of it. But it very clearly says that there's no difference between Lakshmi Narayan and Lakshmi Ji. Mahalakshmi is Radharani, and Lord Narayan is Krishna. So this is not just specifically meant for worship of Lakshmi Narayan only. It is given by the Bhagavatam. It's a very, very wonderful, compressed, complete form of worship. All steps are given in just a few verses. And in fact, a Gayatri is given too. Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya Maha Anubhavaya Mahavibhutipate Sabha Mahavibhutibir Balim Uparamati. And then the purport Prabhupada says that this mantra is extremely important, and every temple in ISKCON should use this mantra in worshipping the deity. And whenever I go around and ask anyone who is into deity worship, do you know this mantra? Oh no, where does it come from? Which pancharatra does it come from? It doesn't come from a pancharatra, it comes from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada says you should use it. Oh, really? Purport Prabhupada specifically says it should be used. I use it in my worship of Vaishnavagram Shilas. Anyway, I'm just making... That was a commercial, folks. And coming back to the main point. In the verses of praise of the Lord, after the worship is done, then the first verse is... Yuvam tu vishvasha vibhu jakadak karana param. You too, yuvam tu vishvasha vibhu. You too who are so endowed with wonderful powers, are both the karana, the cause of the universe together. Both of you are the creators of the universe. Yuvam tu vishvasha vibhu jakadak karana param. Iyeyam, and this is referring to Lakshmi, yeyam prakriti shukshma. So shukshma prakriti is another way of saying para prakriti, antaranga shakti, internal potency. Because shukshma means subtle. Yes. So sometimes shukshma refers just to like linga sharira, subtle body. But sometimes it depends on the context. It means the spiritual world. So it clearly says shukshma prakriti. You are actually the internal potency. But, yuvam tu vishvasha jagadakaranam param iyam prakriti shukshma maya shaktir durateya. You are simultaneously the maya shakti that is durateya. Very, very difficult to overcome. And therefore, the way Prabhupada translates in his English translation, he inserts in there the point that no one can actually understand the position of these 16,108 wives, or Mahalakshmi, or the gopis, or Srimati Radharani ultimately either. Because why would Prabhupada say, when he initiated my god sister, I think I may have told this story, Mahamaya Devi Dasi, and in the initiation in Washington, all kinds of eyebrows were kind of, glances were being exchanged. Why does Prabhupada give her that name? And Prabhupada smiled and said, that is simply another, depending on how you hear the tape, either phase or face of Srimati Radharani. And so Prabhupada, Duratiya also means she cannot, it very difficult, you cannot understand her. So this is the essence of that I was looking for. that these queens simultaneously do embody or do project the mundane feminine principle for those who want it. You see, here in Bengal, there's so many, many devotees of goddess Kali. It's just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita about those who worship the demigods. What does he say? They're taking shelter of the demigods, not knowing that actually I am the only object of worship. He says, this is avidipurvakam. This is puja, but by the wrong method, avidipurvaka. Because I am the only object of worship. And these demigods are not none other than representatives of myself, but these fools don't know it. So therefore, their attempt at deity worship, at puja, is all wrong. And will actually come to a very wrong end. Just like, infamously, the worshippers of goddess Kali, famously, those who worshipped goddess Kali in the fifth canto, who wanted to use Jadbharat as a human sacrifice, they actually discovered how wrong demigod worship is. And it all ends up like that. Because what the this is like in the Bible, what the Lord gives, the Lord takes away. You see, this is on the demigod platform. You see, what the Lord meaning, as represented by the controllers of the material energies of this universe, what he gives us, he also comes. That's why in the Bible, I am Alpha and Omega. I am the beginning and the end of all things. You see, because all these mundane religions, they're basically on the same platform. You see. So anyway, this is the mystery of the consorts of the Lord. So all these people are worshipping. They're so mad. We've gone through three big festivals, Kali festivals, in the last half year, I think. You know, recently also, one day I went to Aikido, and Bihasya Maharaji, who's the wife of my Aikido teacher, she told me, oh, he can't do it today because he was kept up all night by the sound of kirtans that were going. That was not long ago. That was the Kali festival. And then there's the big Kali Puja, which was some, I don't know, about half a year ago or so. And then there was another one after that. So this year, we've gone through three Kali Pujas, big, major ones. They don't, in the same way that the demigod worshippers, the worshippers of Indra or Shiva, don't know that they're actually worshipping Krishna only. But because they're doing it all wrong, therefore they will not get the result that the devotees who are in knowledge, who are actually doing avideya, the proper activity. So therefore they will get a bad result. So similarly, these people are worshipping Radharani, but not knowing it. Because there's only the Lord. And they say ultimate, you know, our acharyas tell us, there's the Lord, there is His Shakti, Vishnu Shakti, Paraprokta, Chetvargya, Tathapara. So there's Vishnu, His Shakti, both are para, transcendental, and then there's a third, the Chetvargya, the living entity. So all the Lord's energies can be. And the position of the third is to be the worshipper of the first two. But for that we have to actually be in sambandha, connection. And for that we have to have Guru, Shastra, Sadhu and Sangha. So this is the mystery, that the Lord Shakti is, as we approach her, she is reciprocating just like Krishna. So therefore, it is mentioned that these goddesses of fortune who are completely transcendental could agitate, could even cause someone like Lord Shiva to fall down. You see? They're pure spiritual personalities, but that beauty can be taken materially. You see? Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, that was his way of rejecting the whole Shakta process, because there are devotees who are known as Shaktas, who worship only the goddess. There are even some who worship only Radharani. You see? Or they worship only other forms of the goddess and never mind the Lord. One of the foremost examples is Ravana. He worships Sita Devi without Ram. In fact, he wanted to kill Ram. So Prabhupada said, this type of worship is meant for lusty fellows who want to take the Lord Shakti. So you see, it is possible. This is the great mistake of the living entity when he starts to think, she can be my consort. And that's how we all end up here. So that is why she is so difficult to understand. One has to, Marj was talking about the right mood, attitude. So when you're dealing with the Lord Shakti, that means the full potency of Krishna. So one has to be very, very careful. So I'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So those of you who turned in essays, please just come and collect them from me. All I've done in each one is give you the reference to that one verse.